When I was growing up, I rarely got the chance to build up any sort of a tan. You see, there were some months out of the year when I was lucky if I even got to see the sun. Most days were much like it is outside today. The sun would make its appearance from the eastern horizon when I was already in school, and would be far beyond the mountains in the west by the time I got out. I felt, at times, almost like something out of the pages of Bram Stoker. And if it was hard for me, it was even more difficult for my mother, who worked the night shift at the hospital and saw the sun only on her days off for most of the year. My mother and I would both say that winters in Montana were marked by darkness, or at least darkness as we understood it. Because it seemed to me that most of us don't really understand darkness as much as we used to. We live in cities and towns that are rife with light pollution, where night, even in the darkest hour of the night, there's still at least one light burning. Darkness, it seems, around here is a pale glimmer of what it could be elsewhere. About 5 years ago, I was in rural South Africa, and there, things just stop when the sun goes down. All motion ends. Anything you haven't finished can wait till tomorrow. In vast sections of the country where electricity is a luxury enjoyed by a select few, a candle's flame, which is a tenuous resource at best, is all that keeps darkness at bay in people's houses. The darkness is a place that can overwhelm the senses, not just sight, but hearing and smell. And we sense that this darkness contains dangers, both real and imagined. So when John writes in his prologue, "The light shines in the darkness," I think that John is talking about his own experience, talking about nights lit by a lamp burning oil that is set on a stand, with a small, tremulous flame keeping out the darkness. The light shines in the midst of the darkness, right down in it, and John sees that Jesus has come into the darkness, right down into the earth. Jesus, who as a human will experience the profound darkness of desert nights, just like John experienced. Darkness that holds the promises of things unseen. And John also sees that the same Jesus who will be transfigured, who is the lantern of God, shining forth with the light of God so brightly that the disciples have to avert their eyes. My father participates from time to time in something called fur trade reenactments. And the first time he took me with him on one of these so-called rendezvous to be with people who dress up like mountain men, like trappers of fur from the 19th century, I was not remotely prepared for the experience. We were camped on the edge of the Missouri River, just east of the Montana border in North Dakota, which is to say we were very far from anything remotely resembling modern civilization. The only constant was the smell of wood smoke. Wood fires were burning from breakfast till well after dinner, and into the night when a central bonfire was lit in the middle of the encampment. On the first night, at the end of the festivities, I realized that my father didn't have a flashlight. How on earth, I thought, were we going to find our way back to our tent? I could barely see my hand in front of my face, much less distinguish our particular campsite from any of the others that looked exactly like it. My father produced a small box, made mostly of glass connected with steel, with a ring on top of it, and inside there was a candle. Once my father had lit the candle from a live ember of the central bonfire, we ventured off in the vague direction of our tent, holding up this lantern against the curtain of darkness. The darkness seemed to fall away as we advanced, the light from the slightly opaque panes of glass pressing ahead of us to clear the path. I kept expecting the darkness to offer some sort of resistance, to try and hold its ground and push back against our advance. But it did not, and we arrived at our campsite safe and sound. And my father hung the lantern up inside the tent, making the whole skin of it into a sort of conical lantern, softly glowing by the river, unwavering in the night. It is not a coincidence that we celebrate the birth of Jesus 4 days after the winter equinox, the shortest day of the year. In these months, the sun is cold comfort, too brief in its stay to be of any great help. In these days, Jesus comes to be among us, who suffer through nights that last too long and days that are all too fleeting. Jesus shines for us like a lantern still burning when all other lights have gone out. Of course, physical darkness is only one type of darkness. There is not only physical darkness, but mental, emotional, and spiritual darkness as well. If any of your lives has been touched by the recent financial crisis, the loss of a job, a cancer diagnosis, the sudden death of a friend or relation, then you feel this type of darkness just as acutely as physical darkness. And this darkness is all the more difficult to banish. You cannot simply flip a switch or strike a match to dispel this darkness. This darkness pushes back, like I thought the North Dakota night would. It attempts to drown out the light of the world. It causes Jesus, the light of the world, to cry out, my God, why have you forsaken me on the cross? But no matter how much the darkness pushes, no matter how much it tries to extinguish the light, it cannot win. In the presence of light, darkness must diminish. The light shines on in the darkness, and even when the light is at its weakest, the darkness has never mastered it. A few summers ago, I worked as a chaplain in a Veterans Affairs hospital. I was assigned to two floors, and one of them was a palliative care floor. Each day, I talked with men who knew that their death was very close at hand. One man in particular I visited daily for more than 2 weeks, easily the longest that I was able to speak with anyone on that particular floor. This man was a veteran of two wars, and in the last few days of his life, he was in increasing amounts of pain, a pain which the myriad of drugs that he was on only partially mitigated. Each day we talked at length, and often we talked about the darkness that he felt. And we returned to that topic 2 days before he died. We talked about the darkness of suffering. And at one point, he said, you know, even in the darkness, there's always a light. I did not understand or did not comprehend the profoundness of his statement, and so I made a comment about the number of small blinking LED lights that he was hooked up to in his room. And he sort of chuckled a little and then said, no, man, no. I mean, in all my pain, all this cancer that's been eating me up, all of it, in all of it, there's a light. I ain't sure what it is, but I have a good guess, and I'm pretty sure it's kept me from going crazy even before I got into the hospital. In all the muck and the darkness, there's always been a light, and I just had to look for it. The light shines in the darkness, and the light was the light of the world, and the darkness could not overcome it. Amen.